I think there's been a big push also for hydrogen in Nigeria. The only problem we have with that is the way it's being structured is hydrogen for export. We also want hydrogen for local and domestic use and infrastructure use.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jadisola Rawa, and this is Solar Roundtable Africa, brought to you by Olon. And today, I have a super important person in the studio with me, someone that, you know, like I've known for a minute, right? Since kind of like my career in this whole renewable energy space started years ago, almost about a decade now, I think. And so it's very exciting for me to be talking to this special guest, and I'm going to introduce her to you in a minute. Her name is Ife Malu, and Ife is the founder of Cleantech Hub Nigeria, and they operate out of Abuja. And Ife is graciously in the studio here with us today. Hi, Ife.
Hi, Jade. Thank you for having me here.
It's very exciting to talk to you. Like, I'm super excited to talk to you because, you know, like I said, when I first started my career, you were one of the first people that I got to meet in the ecosystem. So it's exciting that you're here and we're going to have a chat today.
Looking forward.
Awesome. So I'm talking to Ife today. You know, I mean, we're in the renewable energy space, clean energy space, you know, everything that, you know, within that space. But we're not talking technical because we want this to be interesting to the layman on the streets, right? And part of what I found is it's kind of like a very niche space, renewable energy, clean energy space within Nigeria, maybe Africa. And so we kind of want to break it down for the average Joe out there. And so I want to talk to you more about the impact of your work as opposed to the work itself. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Not the technicalities of it, but, you know, the impact of your work. So I think the best place for us to start from is, what is your why for the work that you do? What is that thing that drives you outside of money, which there isn't any?
People think there's a lot of money, though, but yeah.
Exactly. So what's that why? Why did you wake up? And why did you choose this path?
So that's a very good question. I think my coming into the energy space was more around, the broader energy space was more around opportunities. I used to work for a super minister in Nigeria who was a minister of the economy and finance. And at the time, Nigeria was privatizing its power assets. And I was part of the legal team in the ministry that would look at all of those deals that were happening. We were selling our generation assets and our distribution assets and also trying to toggle around what we would do with transmission. And so I saw the whole gamut of the opportunities there, that this was now going to be a privatized sector, and thought it was a smart move to move from the Ministry of Finance to the Ministry of Power. But when I got into power and I saw the magnitude of the problems, I just knew that what we had as those assets were never going to electrify Nigeria. So that was the first thing, the first realization for me that, oh, we have this massive problem that isn't just going to be solved by privatization. Then for me, it was then, what then, you know? And it was around the same time that the Chibok girl thing happened. So we were also dealing with the fact that there were people who were kidnapped in a very remote part of the country that had zero electricity.
There you go.
And in those places like Chibok, you'd be shocked, Jade, that the further out of the cities you travel, you see how rural Nigeria is.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for those of us in Lagos and Abuja to just assume
that everywhere.
Yes.
And even we don't have 24 hours.
That's the point. Yeah. You know, so, and I think that for me was also then, what can we do? With the Chibok owner, you know, like I met some of the girls who managed to escape and hearing their stories. And it was for me like, what then can we do? Right? So those were the two things. And then I think the third thing was when I used to have a lot of young people who would come to me when I was in the Ministry of Power to say, we have a proposal, especially youth coppers, to electrify the communities where we've been sent to serve. And we as a ministry did not have one kobo to give them.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're asking for things as little as, at that time, $1,000, $500K, $1 million, $2 million, as far back as 2013, 2014, we didn't have that money to give them. And sometimes what would happen is people would take their proposals and then go and present it and use it to get money. So that got me angry. And that was my why. Because I said, if we cannot, these people say they want to go and do CDS projects.
Yeah.
And they're asking you for 2 million.
Yeah.
I know that CDS project will stay in that community long after they finish youth service and gone.
Yeah.
So these are community, and we don't, and most of them were around power. So I just said to myself, no, I'll start a tech hub, a clean energy tech hub, where people like this, if they bring their proposal, our work is to go and look for that money to give them to build those projects.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm excited that we're talking. I'm really excited that we're talking. And a couple of the things that you said brings me to my next question, which is about the impact. And, you know, you talked about the Chibok girls. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that if the community was powered, what happened wouldn't have happened. But then it helps, you know, to be able to at least see who's, you know, who's coming and who's, you know, that kind of thing. And then you also talked about, you know, just having, you know, core members that, you know, want to do good in the communities that they're in and everything. So that brings me to impact. Like I said, you know, I don't want this to be technical. Real people, real stories. Can you tell us one, two of some of the impact, you know, that the work that you've done, any story that stands out to you in terms of, you know, how people's lives have been changed from the work that you do? Please share.
So we were working with one of Orlon's other partner, and they're building a mini grid in Niger State.
Okay.
And part of what we do with mini grid developers is, we go into those communities with them. We help them with things like demand simulation, customer enumeration, you know, sometimes geotagging the homes in those communities. And in this particular community, you know, and the reason why is because sometimes mini grid developers, you know, they run lean teams because these are engineering firms.
Yeah.
So they outsource the things they don't have to worry about, and then they just focus on the core engineering part of it. So all of the ones that have to do with human elements. So, you know, engineers can be very antisocial.
Tell me about it.
You know, so they're just all those human elements. They just want to go and build their grids. All this going to sit down with chiefs, and you know, they are just like, oh yeah, if we have people that can do community engagement for us, let them go and do it. And so one of those communities, they were trying to extend the grid, the mini grid, to the community health center. And we met a woman there who was bleeding. I didn't know she was bleeding, but, you know, my team members called my attention to it. She was covered, you know, because this is the northern part of the country, and she was Muslim. So they saw blood dripping and they called me and said, oh, man, look at this, that she seems to be bleeding. So I asked one of them who could speak Hausa.
Oh, yeah.
To then engage her. The short version of the story is domestic violence. Man, commercial Okada driver, has two wives. This is the more senior wife. Not a lot of money. Sometimes a man doesn't get, because of how far apart these villages are, you know, there's only so much customers you can get.
Yeah.
So comes home sometimes without money. And so kids were dropped out of school because they couldn't pay. I think it was the 12 naira that they were supposed to pay for school fees. That's how bad it was. And so when he comes back home and there's no food and everything, she being the more senior wife and vocal wife,
she bears the brunt of
She confronts him to say, what are we going to eat? And then he pounces on her. So the doctors, we got her treatment that day and we paid for her treatment. And the doctors were like, she's a regular customer, so that this happens every 3 weeks or 4 weeks and everything. So I told my team members to ask her, what can she do? And then she said, oh, that she knows how to make kunu and zobo. But the problem is it's so hot and humid in that part of the country.
Hot.
Yes. And in an hour, it goes sour. So nobody would buy it. So I said, oh, okay, that's not a problem for us. We called our solar sister partners and said, please, we need small solar coolers. Do you have? They sent us one. So we gave it to her. And that cooler could contain, I think, about 12 small bottles. Yes. So she calls us up after a few days and says, please, you know, that can she get to? We're like, okay, what happened? She says, oh, that when she started using this one that day, that she sold out, so that she had to make like three batches. Yeah, that day. Anyway, so we give her, then she calls us 3 weeks later and says she wants 7. We're like, at this point, it cannot be dashed.
Yes.
So yeah. Let us properly structure this.
Yeah.
Yeah, because these things are costly, you know, they are pricey. So we entered into an agreement with her about her paying to own them. And so she had to remit the money over time. I think for that seven, she paid off maybe in about 6 months. And then she wanted 14 more. And so, I mean, she's a woman leader now in her community. The husband sold the motorcycle and invested in their business. So it became, so all the beating and everything stopped. Yeah.
You know, in local palace, money stops nonsense.
It stops nonsense. So, I mean, the woman has, you know, the kids went back to school. They were able to pay that 12 naira or 15 naira, whatever it was she was saying was the school fees at the time. And you see, that's the power of using renewable energy to change lives, to change communities, to change families. Because this woman had gone to being a recipient of aid in hospitals. So she would always wait for their free clinics mm-hmm. and everything. To now being a woman leader, an employer of labor, someone who's able to send her kids to school. And, you know, there's now family cohesion.
You know, and honestly, this is what it's about at the end of the day. And, you know, this is one of the reasons why, you know, for this podcast, I didn't want us to make it technical. I wanted us to talk about the real impact of the
human
work. Exactly, the human stories, you know, because at the end of the day, long, short, tall, that's where it ends, is the lives that you're changing, you know. And I feel like those are the stories that need to be told and that's what needs to be shared. And, you know, so moving from that, you know, we're talking about, you know, you're talking about this cooler, you're talking about, you know, also, but I've also realized that the average Nigerian has no clue. When you talk about clean energy, when you talk about renewable energy, maybe people will say, oh, I know solar panels. But outside of solar panels, you know, like, what does it even, what is clean energy? You know, so if you can break it down in the way that, you know, the average Joe would understand, what are we talking about when we talk about clean energy or renewable or all of that space?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a good thing. For me, it's a good thing that Nigerians now know about solar. And know about solar a lot more than they did 10 years ago when they met.
Sure.
You know, like if you're traveling around the country by road, you see how solarized people have solar on their roof. So to the extent that what people know about clean energy solar, I'm happy. Because there's now been that awareness and everything that we've been doing. Yeah. You guys have been in the trenches with us trying to push this narrative. Yeah. It has worked. Where it becomes tricky is that there is all of this other, and we're not done yet. The country is not electrified, right? But there's newer and better renewable energy systems that we haven't quite gotten our head around. We have wave energy and geothermal, which has to do with water, right? We have biomass and biogas. People are making gasifier. We even have solar generators now.
Wow.
Yes, and some of them locally produced, locally assembled. I just told you about the solar mini cooler. People know about solar freezers solar fridges, solar ACs, solar water heaters. But all of the other types of renewable energy technology, wind, geothermal, biogas, biomass, mini hydros, not so much awareness. And I think that that's the work that we have to do to let people know that there are other types of technologies that we can invest in. And then there are legal and policy frameworks that are also underpinning them. I think there's been a big push also for hydrogen in Nigeria. The only problem we have with that is the way it's been structured is hydrogen for export. We also want hydrogen for local and domestic use and infrastructure use. So there are all of these other technologies that are coming in. The question is, how are we going to harness it?
I was literally going to be like, so that hydrogen, for instance, how does it benefit the average person?
Yeah.
In what way would it change lives if we...
So that's the big thing. I mean, all of the conversations around hydrogen in Nigeria so far has been around exporting it. And, you know, there's been a lot of models I've seen that show that it can be a sort of comparative export commodity like oil and gas and can earn us more revenue. But I also want us to think about how we can use, so if we have them, why can't we have hydrogen for the use of our cars, right? Because they are cleaner fuels and that they can also put people to jobs. The economic advantages of Nigerians being able to utilize those things here. And so one of the things that we're trying to push for is for the hydrogen policy that is in Nigeria. Yes, please, we want exports. We want foreign income. coming from that export. But we want infrastructure here also for domestic use, for domestic refinement of those hydrogen usage. The hydrogen cars are a big thing, you know, now. So when you talk about the new electric mobility cars and everything, hydrogen power cars are really something, especially in Europe. I've seen one or two in Nigeria, and I've always wondered, how do they power it?
How do they power it? Yeah.
So one of the person I know who has it says that he has to import the hydrogen.
Wow.
You have to go out and import your of only two cars that I've seen so far. So it's not as if they can go to a filling station and buy. So we definitely need the infrastructure here.
There's a lot that needs to be done.
Yeah.
So that brings me to a question that I have. On a daily basis, right, how can the average person contribute to the clean revolution? What are the, I think let's play a little game called this or that. So instead of a fuel power generator, what's the alternative? Instead of using coal to cook, what's the alternative in the clean space?
Yeah.
Instead of this, what is this? So we could do that for like maybe five things the average person can pick up and say, okay,
I like this game. So I think for, let's even do clean cooking. I think, you know, we now have clean cook stoves, lots of clean cook stoves in Nigeria, but they are not mainstream. Part of the
That would replace what, like using kerosene stove.
Okay. Yes. And that's because, you know, it's actually around behavioral change. A lot of people are used to what they are used to.
Yeah.
You know, it's when people, like when people want us to stop using firewood, to stop cooking our party jollof rice. You know, we're Nigerians.
Let's not go there. The people will be offended with our party jollof rice business.
Like, how can you tell us not to use firewood?
How are we going to get the smoky?
The smoking, that flavor and everything. But I think it's also partly because we found ways around that. But I think it's also partly because a lot of these things that your new technologies that you're trying to use for the 99%, it's new for them. And it's strange to them. And that's where the work is. For the 1%, of course, people who have money are going to go and buy flashy hydrogen cars.
Yeah.
And they're buying it both, you know, for its utility value, but also it's, you know, it's a class status. So try telling somebody who's a keke driver or a motorcycle rider that he needs to go and buy a hydrogen fuel, even if he could afford it. The time it would mentally take him to shift is, you know, that's where things get lost. So, and I'll give you a good example. During the 2015 election or so, when they were giving out free cook stoves, some people in my family, in my village got, but it's still under their beds. Never got to use them. Why? Nobody actually actively taught them how to use them and what the benefits are. So they never stopped using their kerosene stoves. And so that's the thing, that they're clean cook stoves. And what we see happening now is how we're teaching people not just how to use it, but how to make money out of it. So there are lots of people learning to make commercial briquettes that can power the stove. So you just don't make for your own use. Yes. So instead of going to carry your jerry can and look for kerosene, you're making your briquettes yourself as long as you have the stove. And if you make more than you need, you can sell to your neighbors. And that's quickly caught on because people were like, wow, it's so easy. And then the other thing people didn't realize about the clean cook stoves was that it cooks faster than the ordinary kerosene stove. So everywhere we've gone with those people who do clean cook stoves, we said we bring a bag of beans. And we say, okay, we're going to divide this into two.
And it's cook it on the kerosene stove and then cook it on the clean.
And it's the same bag. So we don't bring two different bags before they will say,
this cooks faster.
Yeah, this one is a different species. Yeah. It's the same bag. You pour half here, you pour half here, and you cook it. And every time we do this experiment, it's almost as if a light bulb goes off in the woman's head, because they're like, wow, instead of cooking beans for an hour and a half, I can cook it for 30 minutes.
And
it's done. And it's sweet. So,
I mean,
you know.
And so, yeah. So I think a lot more sensitization has to go on. And like you said, you know, like the larger part of Nigeria is not the Lagos or the Abuja. Yeah. It's not the urban areas. Yeah, it's the interland. So that's kind of like, we also need to focus on just getting people to, I think before I let you go on that question, I think the other important one would be, I better pass my neighbor, or what's the alternative?
So yeah, one of the good innovations that I've seen people do around solar generators is using it in barbing salons and in hairdressing salons. So you've had a few people that I know. I mean, Consistent Energy, you know, is their tagline is petrol generator displacement. So rather than you use it for those, your small barber shops, not the big sophisticated ones, you use it, you know, where you have maybe two or three barbing stations, and it can power the electric, what's it called?
The clipper.
The clippers, yeah. And everything. And you've seen that people are adopting it faster and faster. And it's the same with hairdressing, where you have one dryer machine or your hand dryer, it can carry two or three. But even more is that we are seeing vulcanizers. You know those vulcanizers that stay on the road to pump your tire?
Yeah.
And they have to pull that small generator?
Yeah.
Instead of them spending time servicing that generator, people are now going to them and saying, can we take your generator and give you this solar generator? So that when people want to pump their cars and you need to pump air into it, this can carry. And you can you imagine... Jade, think whenever you're driving again, think about how many vulcanizer stations you see.
Are you joking? Let me
from there to your office, you know?
Exactly. Just even like on my street, I'm not even kidding. In my vicinity, I probably like five or six.
Yes. So, and that's the scale of the market for solar generators. So if you think about it that way, you think about the opportunity, you think about the amount of pollution that are being reduced, you think about the amount of work, you know? Because when a vulcanizer doesn't have money for diesel and you come to him, and you say you want to pump your tire, he will wave his hand and say, no, so I don't have. Go to the next one. So think about the income that he's now able to generate because he always has his own power that is solar powered.
And we've got so abundance of sunshine. So what
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I could talk to you forever, but I think maybe one or two more questions before we wrap it up today. So I know, like, you know, a lot of what has come up from this conversation has been the importance of education and just how much we need to talk about these things and reiterate it to the right people. I know one of the things that Clean Tech Hub was doing and has done in the past is the Energy Access Bootcamp for students. So tell us a bit about that, because it's something that I'm very interested in as well personally, because I'm thinking to myself, like, all of us remember some of the nonsense that we learned in school that we don't, that is completely useless in our lives now, in that kind of thing. So I feel like it's important to have the conversations in those institutions of learning, right? And you never know, it could change the trajectory of someone's life. You know, it could be the difference between coming out of school and saying, I'm clueless as to what I want to do. Choosing a path in something that also has social impact. So tell us a bit about that and what the plans are for it in the future.
So this is, you know, this is why I love Olon, because you guys have been. I mean, and you know, I've always been very public about it. In fact, somebody was saying that I'm Olon's best PR, and I'm like,
I'll take it. Thank you.
I'll take it as well, because every time we've had difficult ideas, Olon is one of the few institutions that have backed us. Other people are not so open to what they call risky ideas. And Olon has been front and center there. And I say this because of the boot camp. From 2018, when we started that, we realized that there is a big shift to this green economy, this, you know, emerging renewable energy economy. But nobody was talking about the skills that was going to be needed to run it. Mm-hmm. You know, so there was a push for mini grid revolution. You know what happened under Damilola's regime at REA, and there was all of that, both from, you know, the engineering part to the finance part. Not enough Nigerians to run it. Yeah. And so if we're going to be a part of this energy transition, where are the skills going to come from? And so when we came to Olon in 2018, that's how far back we came to you guys and said, listen, we have to go around Nigerian universities talking to them about this sector, how to build skills in this sector, how to gain knowledge in this sector. You guys were about the only one out of the three or four other organizations who could have funded this that did. And then we went around the country, particularly doing this campaign. So we went to universities, worked with College of Engineering, Department of Engineering, Colleges of Science to say, here is the opportunity. Can we do 3-day boot camp with your students. And those halls were filled with 1,500 people, 2,000 students who wanted to come and know and learn. And it wasn't even just the engineering part, because sometimes we'll go and say, you know, a renewable energy company, a mini grid company needs a receptionist.
It needs skills as well.
Needs, you know, accountant.
Marketer.
Needs marketer. Yeah. Needs everything. Needs human resources. So rather than you people waiting for the big companies that have all the, please start with this. You know, you're looking for job. These are jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also have to know about the sector to even want to apply in it. Because when people look at, oh, it's a renewable energy engineering firm.
It's so technical. It looks so out of, absolutely.
So we were not just talking, the first day would be for the engineers. The second day would be for the sciences, social sciences. And then the third day would be for every other person, even people that are in arts. And that's when we started talking to people about, do you know you can do things around digital media to sell, you know, renewable energy products
absolutely,
to talk about.
Absolutely.
So people, we were doing this as far back as 2018, in partnership with Orlon. And we went around, I think, about 12 universities then, and it was a hit. Well, that program, along with some of the other programs we had, led us to start the Street Business School. And that business school is teaching some of those women we work with in communities how to use solar to start micro businesses. So you see how our lady in Niger State started her own. So through how we were able to build out a pared down curriculum, sometimes in local languages, and we can use to teach women, you know, on how to start micro businesses. Those who are frying masa, they're using the clean cook stoves, you know, to fry masa and everything. And fry it at scale. You know, if you're able to do with your firewood, just so, because the firewood will burn out, right? But these ones are not burning out anytime soon. So if you're only able to fry, you know, for about 2 hours, you're frying for 8 hours with the clean cook stoves. But you have to also teach them that this is a business, you know, because if not with women, you know how you spend money and then you plow it back into the family.
Absolutely.
You know, because we always have problems to stay.
There's no Maggie, there's no this.
There's school fees to pay, there's food to buy, there's so you have to actually teach them what is your revenue, what is your cost, what is your profit, put yourself on a salary. All those things you will learn in an MBA class.
Absolutely.
You teach
the
them
business
and then they get it. Women are very smart.
We're very smart. I always tell the men.
Very smart. They get it. So that was those are the sort of things we started the Street Business School. We continue to do boot camps. We run the first incubation program
we ran.
It was all unsponsored. And some of those incubatees who we granted $10,000 are doing well. They've gone on. There's one that has raised about $2 million. You know, another one.
Let me give them Solaris.
She's gone on. She's doing great things. Yeah. I've seen her raise $100,000+ here. Yeah. We're always able to write recommendations for them.
Absolutely.
And they're forever grateful. Whenever they come back and give testimonials, we're like, thank you. And thank you all on, you know, because you guys.
And
you don't know how many lives you're changing.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that you say this for two reasons. You know, it's literally one of the reasons that I love the job that I do at Orlon. And secondly, is also because when I came into the space, I had zero background in renewable energy. Yeah. But me, I'm just crazy. Nobody would know it. I'm just crazy. I apply for jobs even when, you know, like I'm one of those dairy ones. I'm like, waiting they have food. What's the worst that can happen? They will not give me the job, but at least, you know. And so that's just to say to the young people out there, that, you know what, just take a chance. Just take bet on yourself. Take a chance, because at the end of the day, look, nobody in the space has two heads, right? You work, you learn, and then you grow as you move on. Like, it's been so fantastic talking to you. And as we wrap up, just, you know, what's next for Ify? Like, if your work, I'm so like inspired by you today, because, you know, like the work that you do is making a difference. So what's next for you as a person, and what's next for CleanTech as we wrap this up?
I think the biggest five-year plan we have now is to build out our solar-powered recycling plant. And it's going to be recycling plastics, but also used lead-acid batteries. Jeez. So we've acquired the land, about 3 hectares, and we're now trying to raise money to build out. So that's the next big challenge for us. And it's an audacious goal, because it's not something I've ever done before. We've never had to raise money before, but now I'm having to have financial discussions. And if we're able to do it successfully in the next 3 years, we'll do replicate another one in the Southeast.
Fantastic. Yeah. That is something you know, I'm always like, you know, like I knew we're going to have a good conversation today. And I'm so glad that we had this because, you know, like you're always breaking, you're always going for the next thing. And yeah. I'm so excited for you for this. It's one of the big things that we're looking at All On as well, is the fact that we have, as we contribute to the solution, we also have to contribute to the solution that the problem that the solution is bringing. Exactly. Yeah. So it's definitely something that, you know, that is definitely in the cards for us somewhere along the line as well. But Ify, thank you so much for taking the time to join us all the way from Abuja. Very excited to have you on the podcast today, and I hope that we can continue to have more interesting conversations and just generally make everyone understand that, look, it's not rocket science in this ecosystem, right? It's something for all of us, and the more we understand it, the better it is for everybody in the long run.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much
for joining us today. Gade. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Solar Roundtable Africa, brought to you by Jade Solarowa, supported by Olon. And yeah, that's what we have for you today. But I mean, this conversation has been exciting, and I'm sure that you know that we have even more exciting episodes coming. So don't forget to join us, same time, every week. Cheers.